Have you ever gone on a hike, or a light walk, if hikes aren't your thing, in a national park or forest and followed trail markers? Have you ever found yourself wondering who decided where the trail markers went? Like, who decided the trail should be here and not somewhere else? How did that trail get there in the first place? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. This episode is not about the history of trails and trail markers, as much of a banger as that would be, I'm sure. But today's episode is about the paths we humans tread and have tread for millennia, where they lead and why. And about the people who believe that those paths aren't random, but instead reveal a kind of magical geography of the Earth beyond anything we can comprehend. And the path of this episode will start out with one man noticing some interesting lines on a map to, well, aliens. Because, of course it does. In 1855, Alfred Watkins was born in Hertfordshire, England, to a well-respected, wealthy family who ran a number of local businesses. As a young adult, Watkins went to work for his family, traveling from one business to another along the countryside, during which time he developed not only an intimate understanding of the layout of the land and topography, but also a passion for photography. He took landscape photos with a camera he built out of a cigar box. But Watkins wasn't just an amateur landscape enthusiast and cigar box photographer. He also had interests in archaeology. He was a beekeeper and considered himself a naturalist and an antiquarian, which is apparently just someone who's into old books, and also served on the local council and campaigned for the liberal cause. In short, he was, it seems, the 19th century version of a hippie. One day, in June 1921, while visiting a friend and surveying the landscape, as he was wont to do, Watkins noticed that several landmarks seemed to be placed in a straight line. According to a piece in The Guardian from May 2000, quote, "When he took a ruler to his map, it was indeed true. In fact, all across the countryside, churches and standing stones, crossroads and burial mounds, moats and beacon hills, holy wells and old stone crosses, fell into perfect alignment." As Watkins himself later recalled in his 1925 book, The Old Straight Track,
"Imagine a fairy chain stretched from mountain peak to mountain peak as far as the eye could reach and paid out until it touched the high places of the earth at a number of ridges, banks, and knolls. Then visualize a mound, circular earthwork or clump of trees, planted on these high points, and in low points in the valley, other mounds ringed round with water to be seen from a distance. Then great standing stones brought to mark the way at intervals, and on a bank leading up to a mountain ridge or down to a ford, the track cut deep so as to form a guiding notch on the skyline as you come up. In a bush or mountain pass, the road cut deeply at the highest place straight through the ridge to show as a notch afar off. Here and there, at two ends of the way, a beacon fire used to lay out the track, with ponds dug on the line, or streams banked up into flashes to form reflecting points on the beacon track so that it might be checked when, at least once a year, the beacon was fired on the traditional day. All these works, exactly on the sighting line. The wayfarer's instructions are still deeply rooted in the peasant mind today. When he tells you, quite wrongly now, you just keep straight on."
Perhaps it's because I'm not an antiquarian that I don't understand most of what this guy is talking about. I barely have time for new books, let alone antique ones that are probably written as densely or more than this passage would suggest. Also, the peasant mind? Yikes. But I do know this. What Watkins had discovered was a phenomenon sometimes referred to as earth currents, ghost roads, spirit roads, fairy paths, and serpent lines, but which Watkins called ley lines. As Kate Kirshner at How Stuff Works put it, quote, "What if I told you there were straight lines crossing and crisscrossing Earth that demarcated important locations? Ley lines are kind of like latitudinal and longitudinal lines in one sense. They're not lines we can actually see in the real world, but the theory is that big, important monuments, think Stonehenge and the pyramids of Giza, are all running on a kind of energy highway that connects them," end quote. And Simon Ingram at the National Geographic described it this way, quote, "A ley line is part of an implied network of impressionistic significance said to run across the land in straight intersecting lengths, not unlike a cobweb. These are said by believers to link or align ancient monuments, notable landscape features, and settlements across the world on a series of invisible energy pathways," end quote. So, like a worldwide web. Ley, L-E-Y, is an Anglo-Saxon word meaning a clearing in the woods. So ley lines essentially means straight lines that connect clearings. The assumption, according to Watkins' theory, was that the Neolithic peoples, without cartography equipment, sophisticated measuring implements, or an efficient way of commuting cross-country, placed certain monuments strategically along straight lines, for some reason. Arguably, the most famous example of these invisible directionals is St. Michael's. St. Michael's ley line stretches across a whopping 350 miles and passes through numerous sites dedicated to the Archangel, all while oriented toward the location of the sunrise on May 8th, which is when the Latin liturgy celebrates the apparition of St. Michael. So not only are the sites aligned, but their placement is such that something nifty happens there on May 8th. Laser light show, anyone? As ley lines enthusiast John Michel described it,
"The St. Michael line of traditional dragon sites in southwest England appears to be set between two prominent Somerset hills, both dedicated to St. Michael, with ruined churches on their summit. These two hills are Glastonbury Tor and The Mump at Borough Bridge, some 10 miles to the southwest. Both these hills appear to have been artificially shaped so that their axes align with each other and their orientation, 27 degrees northeast, can be read off a large ordnance survey sheet."
Could you imagine being a saint and people are like, "Hey, we built this monument to you," and you're like, "Oh, sweet, where is it?" And they're like, "The Mump? Awesome. Did you also dedicate a fountain to me on Measle Mountain?" John Michel, by the way, would go on to take the idea of ley lines and run with them in not exactly the straightest of lines, but we'll meander back to that later. In September of 1921, Watkins gave a lecture to members of the Woolhope Club, the local history field society for Hertfordshire, of which he was president. His talk was about his new revelation that prehistoric humans were far more geographically inclined than we might have thought. Watkins argued that early people navigated and traversed the landscape not by following, quote, natural lines such as rivers and streams or ridges and valleys, end quote, but rather by precise straight lines that they themselves had calculated and demarcated from one landmark to another, even if, apparently, there happened to be a very steep mountain or hill right in the middle of said straight line. Early people, Watkins explained, were built to be able to traverse steep hills and mountains just by walking straight up them. Unlike literally any other mammal might do when trying to traverse a steep incline. Needless to say, anthropologists and the like have yet to verify this claim. Nor have they been able to find evidence that early people had a penchant for walking in ramrod straight lines. Why human beings would have devolved to be unable in the modern age to simply walk to the top of Everest is beyond me. But then again, I'm no anthropologist, biologist, nor paleontologist. Anyway, as Robert McFarlane wrote for The Telegraph in May 2013, Watkins, quote, "explained that the leys existed as a series of aligned mark points rather than as continuous trackways. This was why the countryside was unmarked by the remains of thousands of miles of paths." Changes over millennia had disguised the lay pattern, but from the Brentwoodwine Hills, Watkins had glimpsed it, and he was now revealing its existence to the world. So the contour paths and ridgeway tracks which people now tended to follow were, Watkins told his audience, aberrations from the old tracks. The ancient English road was not, in fact, G.K. Chesterton's rolling road or reeling road. The path was a straight path, end quote. Watkins explained that the reason these tracks were mostly gone by 1921 was because the habit of traveling between monuments had ended long ago. The monuments, however, or at least the ruins or vestiges of them, remained as evidence that there were, at one point, straight tracks and roads connecting them. However, the ancient tracks, Watkins believed, made for many of the modern-day roads, which were built following the ancient tracks or lines made by prehistoric humans, like trails in national parks and forests. These trails were not made arbitrarily by whomever is normally in charge of that kind of thing, but rather by following the natural pathways made over centuries by animals and humans who lived there. As these early paths evolved along with us humans, they became more formal walkways, roads, or even trade routes. After his lectures about his discovery of the ancient ley lines, Watkins published two books, Early British Trackways in 1922, and the aforementioned The Old Straight Track in 1925. In these books, Watkins continued to identify ley lines through Great Britain, including a 176-mile line running from one town in North Wales to another in the south. No one knows exactly what the purpose of this track might have been, in part, of course, because people don't really know that it actually exists in the first place, but also because, you know, it is said to have originated in the 8th century, and records from that time are notoriously hard to find. Indeed, Watkins believed part of the track may have even predated the 8th century, though it bears repeating that he didn't have any evidence of any of this aside from his own assumptions. Watkins also believed that one of England's most famous prehistoric monuments, Stonehenge, is a beacon point along a ley line connecting several prehistoric beacons. According to a piece by Chris Griffiths from the BBC from 2019, quote, "While many believe Stonehenge to be a quintessential example of a prehistoric sun alignment site, Watkins believed that it was the crossing point of several long-distance ley alignments. He listed four in great detail in his sun alignment chapter of the Old Straight Track. One main ley, he believed, crossed the old Sarum Mound and Salisbury Cathedral to the south, while another runs from Berry Hill, the site of a former hill fort, to the east through what he termed the Slaughterstone at Stonehenge," end quote. According to Watkins, beacon points along a ley line might be old churches, their ruins, monuments such as Stonehenge, ancient burial places, or, as one example highlighted by Griffiths for the BBC states, quote, "He identified tracks that intersected the priory and ran straight up the surrounding hillsides. At the priory, there's architectural evidence of a stone cresset, a stone carved with cup-shaped hollows, which he believed were used to hold oil and used to light beacon signals," end quote. So, first of all, seems like we have Watkins and his ilk to thank for Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code, so fuck you very much, Watkins. But also, regarding the cresset, Watkins assumed it to be used for something like the beacon signals that Merry lights in Lord of the Rings Return of the King, but instead of pyres of wood and oil, I guess it's cup-shaped hollows. And you know me, I'm no antiquarian, but couldn't a cup-shaped hollow be for anything? Holy water? A communal feet-washing station? A vessel for catching the blood of sacrificed animals? The thing about cup-shaped hollows is that they are incredibly useful and practical and could have any number of uses. Anyway. Beacons may also be the summits of hills where there may or may not be evidence of some kind of monument that may or may not have been there at some point. For example, as layhunters.co.uk explains, quote, "Between Mendips and Glastonbury, the Lay passes through Yarley Crossroads. There is a small mump of stone as the remains of a possible markstone," end quote. remains of a possible markstone is a phrase that, in my opinion, should only appear in preliminary notes of an early investigation and certainly not as some kind of official evidence of a theory. Like, come back when you've definitely identified the small mump of stone as anything other than a small mump of stone. But small mumps of stone are about to become the least of our worries, because, as with any kind of theory that relies heavily on interpretation, educated guesses, and very little evidence, we're about to enter into the inevitable UFO activity portion of this whole schmageggy. As I mentioned just before we broke for those entertaining ads, much of the so-called evidence of this prehistoric lines is not exactly peer-reviewed, but rather based on hunches and assumptions. And where there are hunches and assumptions, there are bound to be those who take the baton and run so far afield from the original starting point that, frankly, the line connecting the theory's offshoots from the original theory are as faint and hard to identify as most of Watkins' ley lines. One of the beacon points Watkins had identified was the Glastonbury Tor. Tor is British for small hill, which had been the site of a few holy monuments throughout the millennia, the remains of which include what some believe to be an ancient maze that may have been a site for rituals or initiations. This could be based on historical evidence, but honestly, it also could just be people like, those ruins look kind of like a maze, therefore this must have been a weird religious site. And from there, according to layhunters.co.uk, quote, then the Tor may be Ser Sidi, the abode of Ceridwen, the enchantress possessing the cauldron of poetic inspiration. At the foot of the Tor is Chalice Well, said to be where Joseph of Arimathea hid the Holy Grail, end quote. That's a lot of tenuous connections, my friends. Anyway, the very abridged by me version of this legend goes that on that site, a Christian saint heard some people talking about fairies, to which the saint butt in and was like, not today, Bob, fairies are evil. I don't know what the immediate response to this unsolicited admonition was, but I hope it was, bitch, no one was talking to you. Mind your own business, sir. Whatever the case, at some point after this encounter, the fairy king sent an invitation to the saint to meet him on the same spot. And, according to layhunters.co.uk, quote, concealing a flask of holy water beneath his cloak, Saint Colin reached the summit where he saw a glittering palace thronged with richly dressed creatures dancing to captivating music. The fairy king invited the saint to partake of the banquet, but he declined and instead cast holy water at the assembly. Instantly, the vision and melodies faded into the nocturnal mists, and Saint Colin was alone on the Tor. End quote. What an asshole! Could you imagine? You invite someone over to your party and offer them goodies, and they throw holy water on you? Like, fuck off! There are plenty of hills in England. You can't let the fairies have one? Anyway, one evening in 1969, as layhunter.co.uk explains it, a group of Westerners visited this hill, quote, led by Sangharakshita, a leading Western Buddhist. One of the group suddenly leapt yards into the air as if possessed by an elemental force emanating from the ruined tower. At the same time, inexplicable balls of orange light came out of the misty sky, half-circled the hill, and then disappeared. End quote. Later that same year, four workers on the graveyard shift saw a saucer-shaped object hover over the hill, and then some kind of red, fiery, rapidly moving object fly over Glastonbury. And in 1970, a police officer reported seeing, quote, eight egg-shaped objects in formation over the Tor. They were dark maroon in color, end quote. But why Glastonbury? What's so special about this place that people have visions and defy the laws of gravity and see UFOs? Interestingly, around the same time that Watkins was having his revelations about straight lines all over England, poet and philosopher Catherine Maltwood discovered a map of the zodiac carved into the ground in Glastonbury. As described by layhunters.co.uk, the terrestrial zodiac at Glastonbury is a, quote, 10-mile-wide circle of effigies formed from natural features, modified by ancient earthworks, roads, and dikes, and said to depict anthropomorphic and zoomorphic representations of constellations associated with the zodiac, end quote. That is, carved into the natural landscape are various zodiac signs, which Maltwood believed were aligned with the sun in some way. Based on her calculations, she dated the zodiac at 2700 BC. According to a website devoted to her, Maltwood believed the, quote, knowledge embodied in the zodiac at Glastonbury, in its reflection of God's universe and its laws, transcended and preceded all other compositions, including the Masonic Temple of Solomon. It was the all-important key to the evolution of human consciousness and was deliberately designed to be passed on down through the ages to be rediscovered at the appropriate time, end quote. Apparently, she, quote, sought to penetrate the layers of time that covered the face of the country and glimpsed a remote golden age of science, poetry, and religion when Britain was a holy land under enchantment. Catherine Maltwood was convinced she had recovered the lost key to these British mysteries and that the ancient wisdom embodied in the zodiac would restore the true traditions, glory, and destiny of the race, end quote. In other words, God chose Glastonbury to hide his secrets because of the nice white people there. In fact, some proponents of the ley line theory also link Glastonbury with Jesus, claiming that he'd visited there at some point. According to a piece from Reuters from 2009, quote, Church of Scotland minister and researcher Gordon Strachan argues that Jesus may have come to Britain to further his education because the area was a stronghold of the ancient Druids then associated with ancient wisdom, end quote. Some even claim that Jesus built the first cathedral at Glastonbury. I mean, okay. Jesus was a poor carpenter who lived 3,000 miles away from Glastonbury, and by all actual historical evidence, was much more interested in tearing down holy temples than building them. But sure, Jesus went to England in a little reed boat, I guess. The Glastonbury zodiac isn't the only instance of figures carved into the earth along ley lines. There is also a dragon hill, or a horse hill, depending on who you ask, as well as a dog hill very near the zodiac that some believe has a person riding on its back. These images, of course, are extremely subjective, just like the astrological zodiac signs in the sky or the traditional Greek constellations, where one person might see a random cluster of stars, another sees a bear. Amateur leylining was a popular pastime in England before the start of World War II, when it took a backseat to, well, staying alive. So I suppose it stands to reason that new supposed beacon points were being discovered all over the place. But it was after World War II, in the 50s and 60s, that ley hunting started to take on a different quality. This new generation of ley hunters seemed to be those who leaned toward a more open mindset. You know, like maybe they had a doobie or two in their cigarette case, you dig? Or they wore turtlenecks and berets, my man. Beatniks and hippies. In the late 50s, ufologist Aimé Michel found ley lines connecting alleged locations of UFO sightings. And then, in 1961, ex-RAF pilot Tony Wedd expounded on Michel's theory to propose that UFOs used ley lines to navigate. As it was described in the Guardian piece, quote, if UFOs were flying along lays, it must be because the lines were useful as navigation aids. Was this a visual thing, or were the spacecraft picking up on some sort of magnetism? And if the latter, then were ley lines not trading routes after all, but some form of electrical energy? End quote. Oh boy. So now these theoretical lines, which I will remind you still haven't been proven to actually exist, have gone from possible trade routes to UFO guiding technology. Okay. In 1962, a group of ufologists further hijacked the ley lines concept by starting a club called the Ley Hunters Club and putting out a magazine called The Ley Hunter. And then in 1969, another French dude, Jean-Michel, not to be confused with Aimé Michel, please try to keep your Michels in order, wrote a book called The View Over the Atlantic, in which he went even further out there. According to the BBC, quote, Michel posited spiritual dimensions to ley lines, created the idea of earth energies, and made Glastonbury the undisputed capital of the New Age. Suddenly, ley lines became known not just for country walks and genteel treasure hunts, but as routes into extraordinary and interplanetary worlds between worlds, end quote. Ley lines were now adopted by the Earth Mysteries Movement, which according to Wikipedia is, quote, a wide range of spiritual quasi-religious ideas focusing on cultural and religious beliefs about the Earth, generally with a regard for specific geographic locations of historic importance. Similar to modern Druidy, prehistoric monuments are of particular spiritual importance to believers in Earth mysteries who consider certain locations to be sacred and/or containing active spiritual energies. The term alternative archaeology has also been used to describe the study of Earth mystery beliefs, end quote. The Earth Mysteries people folded the ley lines concept into the New Age paganism movement of the 70s and 80s. According to sacredfootprints.com, quote, ley lines link historical, religious, and archaeological sites such as megalithic structures, ancient temples, and sacred groves. Some believe this alignment suggests a deeper cosmic connection, hinting at intentional design. It's astounding that these monuments were built along these lines long before we had the technology to measure such energy points. This prompts the question, did ancient civilizations possess a greater understanding of the universe than we do now? As we explore the meaning of ley lines, a distinct pattern emerges. These energetic pathways often intersect with places of great human significance. From the massive stones of megalithic structures to the reverend ground of ancient temples, these sites offer evidence of a profound cosmic interplay, end quote. So now the lines are just being referred to as energetic pathways, as though that's just the accepted science behind them. The description continues, quote, one prevailing theory posits that ley lines align with Earth's natural magnetic fields. These lines might serve as conduits for Earth's energy, potentially influencing the surrounding environment. Some researchers speculate that these energy pathways could affect human consciousness, lending support to ancient beliefs and their spiritual significance. Central to the ley line enigma is the captivating dance between Earth's magnetic fields and these invisible threads of energy. This theory proposes that ley lines synchronize with the Earth's natural magnetic forces, creating conduits through which vital energies flow. Such resonance is believed to hold sway over the environment, potentially influencing everything from plant growth to animal behavior. Moreover, some researchers suggest that these ethereal pathways might hold the power to subtly affect human consciousness, offering a tangible link between the physical and the metaphysical. End quote. Okay. These ancient trade lines and/or UFO navigational lines and/or lines of spiritual energy connecting the physical with the metaphysical don't just exist in Great Britain, of course. The English don't have a monopoly on lines. According to the BBC, other cultures, including Chinese, indigenous people of Australia, and the ancient Inca, all have their own versions of lines they believed connected important monuments. And the Earth Mysteries crowd these days believes that one particularly strong hotspot of the Earth's energy along a mystical line exists in Ibiza. Look, you may think of Ibiza as a haven for bronzed and boozed-up beach beauties, but these people will assure you, according to a piece in L'Officiel from 2023, quote, the energy of the ley lines on Ibiza is said to be especially strong during the summer solstice, which is a time of great spiritual significance. Many people come to the island during this time to connect with the ley lines and the powerful energy they create. Some believe that the energy they create can have a profound effect on human consciousness and well-being. Others suggest that ley lines might be responsible for creating the unique cultural and artistic atmosphere that has made Ibiza a hub for creative and spiritual exploration, end quote. I mean, maybe it's an invisible line of magical earth energy, or maybe it's the booze and drugs mixed with a little heat stroke and a lot of sex. Potato, potato. But it's not all kumbaya and spiritual healing. A company called World Development Systems, whose website is currently being redesigned and therefore is missing a lot of information, but who sells, stuff, includes this fun tidbit of information. Quote, "It can be very difficult to live or work in a place where geopathic stress exists. Such stress allows different kinds of discordant energies and entities in. We sell tools to help bring balance to this kind of problem," end quote. This company claims that, quote, 1 in 10 houses and offices are believed to be suffering from the effects of geopathic stress. This is often described as sick office slash building syndrome or cancer building and can be caused by many individual or combined components acting together. Ley lines or energy lines run across the entire world, a bit like veins in our body. When a ley line or energy line travels through a building, it can have a detrimental effect on the inhabitants. If you are sitting on one of these lines at home or at work or sleeping on one, then your body will require all of its natural healing ability to balance the adverse effects that these lines cause on your biofield. The long-term effects of this will degrade your immune system, and then negative pathology can set in," end quote. Maybe that's what's been wrong with me. It turns out it's not end-stage capitalism. It's ley lines and 5G. Thank God World Development Systems sells the cure for the negative effects of bad ley lines. For just about $750, I can get a device that, quote, "works by harmonizing any imbalances that it detects through the ground-earth loop aerial circuit within the unit. It compares these imbalances with the stored patterns in the unit, and if there is a match, then it will try to counter these imbalanced patterns by sending a specific harmonizing pattern into the field of the ground-earth loop of the house or office," end quote. Because, duh. Man, I went into the wrong business. Most scholars and archaeologists dismiss the theory of ley lines pretty much altogether, and not just the out-there ideas involving UFOs and healing or harming Earth energy lines. Among those who dismiss the idea of ley lines, the general school of thought is that our prehistoric ancestors may have had a good understanding of the stars and navigation and the lay of the land for miles and miles. They may have even had a good understanding of geometry based on the evidence of prehistoric monuments. But the idea that they would be able to chart out arrow straight lines, or that they would even travel in these lines even when they were very hard to traverse, like, say, a mountain, is hard to swallow. In the 80s, scholars Tom Williamson and Liz Bellamy managed to cast a lot of doubt over the whole enterprise when, according to All That's Interesting, quote, "they discovered that there was such a high density of archaeological sites in England, it would basically be possible to draw a straight line in any direction and connect multiple locations," end quote. Furthermore, they argued, the beacons along the so-called lines are not small points, but rather very large geographical features or human-constructed monuments or buildings. The larger a beacon point is, the easier it is to draw a straight line from one to the other because you can pick any intersecting point within the beacon you want. If indeed the beacons were mere inches big, the lines connecting them might be more impressive. They were also able to create ley lines with any number of modern-day points. By randomizing the features they chose with a grid map, they found that, quote, "the score on the simulated randomized map was slightly better than on the original." That doesn't itself disprove the existence of ley lines, but it disproves the original proposition that if you simply take old stuff on ordnance survey maps, it falls into alignment more than chance would predict. It doesn't," end quote. Williamson and Bellamy went so far as to survey a lot of Watkins' original ley line area of discovery and unearthed many ancient points that, according to Watkins' theory, should have aligned on ley lines, and they didn't. A similar theory to ley lines was touted by an independent researcher named Tom Brooks, who, quote, had argued that keen mathematicians lived in Britain as far back as 5,000 years ago, before the Greeks had even invented geometry. He, like Watkins, examined ancient sites, 1500 to be precise, and found that they had been built on a series of isosceles triangles, each one guiding ancient humans to the next. End quote. Once again, trying to find evidence that the British were just a superior race of people. But another researcher, Matt Parker, took Brooks' premise and applied it to Woolworth's department store locations around Great Britain and found many that were aligned in perfect isosceles triangles. He did this by skipping over most of the stores on the map and only focusing on those that fit his hypothesis, which is what he accused Tom Brooks of doing. But despite the efforts of scientific killjoys who clearly don't want us to have any fun at all, the myth and mythology around ley lines endures. In 2005, the Seattle Arts Commission paid a group of New Age dowsers called the Geo Group to draw up a ley line map of Seattle. The Geo Group released this statement, quote, "The vision of the Seattle Ley Line Project is to heal the earth energies within the Seattle city limits by identifying ley line power centers in Seattle, neutralizing negative energies, and then amplifying the positive potential of the ley line power centers. We believe the result will be a decrease in disease and anxiety and an increased sense of wholeness and well-being and the achievement of Seattle's potential as the center of power for good on spaceship Earth." End quote. Occupational psychologist, coaching psychologist, and gestalt psychotherapist Jake Farr told the BBC, as reported by The Guardian in 2000,
"The need to belong is also a primary human driver. Where do we belong? Who do we belong with? What's our place? Contrary to this, the modern Western world pivots towards individualism, capitalism's bedfellow, leaving many feeling lonely and lacking connection to place and community. Ley lines may provide people with a way to map felt connections to place and, on a deeper level, may speak to the interconnectedness of all life. Reaching for harmony and balance, which, of course, buying the latest product simply can't touch."
I mean, World Development Group has at least one product you can buy for reaching harmony and balance. It'll only cost you about $750. Just follow the straight line right to your bank. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. The next time your phone rings with an unknown number, you might want to answer it. It could be a call from the other side. Or if you don't want to wait, why not pick up the phone and call yourself? After death communications and wind telephones. And if you want even more Strange and Unexplained, head on over to our Patreon where you get 3 bonus episodes a month for just $5. And for $7, you get all that plus all the regular episodes ad-free. Patreon.com/Strange and Unexplained. Strange and Unexplained is a production of the Obsessed Network. This episode was produced by Natalie Grillo and Angela Palladino. Written by me, Daisy Egan. Researched by Jess McKillop. Edited by Eve Kerrigan, sound engineered and mixed by Jennifer Swatek. Our voice actors for this episode were Luther Creek, Ryan Garcia, and Jordan Kai Burnett. We have a lot of fascinating and bizarre stories to share with you, but we want to hear your episode suggestions as well. If you have an idea for a topic we should cover, go to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. If you like our show, please help us out by rating and reviewing us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. A 5-star review and a quick sentence really helps the show out a lot. If you don't like our show, you can leave a terrible review. The name of the podcast is The Last Gay Conservative.